Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
We spoke about it a lot on the show, and sometimes when we talk about issues such as this, I feel a little bit uncomfortable. It's three white middle-aged guys, and we can't really... Go ahead, Peter.
Well, you two are higher middle-aged. I'm closer. I'm a little lower down, but keep going.
If you live past 82, I'll give you a dollar. Anyway, So, Herman Edwards is a friend of the show. We know him as the coach of the Jets, as our colleague, longtime colleague with ESPN, and now the head coach at Arizona State. And really, he speaks about these problems so much better than we could, and we asked him if he would be on with us today, and he was gracious enough to do that. Herm, thank you. It's Michael, Don, and Peter. How are you?
I'm well, man. I hope you guys are doing well and same.
We're trying. Is our country irreparably broke?
Well, I don't know if the country's broke. I think the justice system needs to be looked at. When you think about Lady Justice, it's kind of interesting. You know, she's blindfolded. And that represents objectivity. Shouldn't see a person's identity, their wealth, their power, their race. And the scales that she holds are supposed to be balanced. And I think right now they're not balanced. And we've seen that now for quite some time. This is kind of eerie to me what I'm watching because in 1968, I was 14 years old. And Martin Luther King was assassinated. And I can remember sitting in our living room with my father and my mom and watching what was taking place in our country. And having a conversation with them. And now, 52 years later, I have two daughters that are 14 and 13. And they're watching this stuff on television. And it's ironic. And, you know, that's 52 years ago, guys. And The sad thing for me is that this is not a black problem. It's not. This is an American problem. And we can fix it. We can fix it if we really want.
How do we fix it?
And I think, well, there has to be, you know, it goes back to the ball, right? It always goes back to the ball for me. It's the huddle. We don't huddle up anymore. Like you just said, it's uncomfortable for some of you guys, you know, to have a conversation. You guys feel like uncomfortable talking about this. I get it. I get it. I understand that. But that's the problem. We don't get in the huddle anymore and converse. That's what's the greatest thing about football. It brings all kind of walks of life into a locker room and this team atmosphere from all different religions, backgrounds, it doesn't matter. And we figured it out. We just figured out. We coexist and we respect each other. And somewhere along the line, we have fallen short as America to do that.
Well, I had mentioned it earlier, Herm. Don't talk about support. Talk about joining. Because support only seems to go so far. So what can people do to join, especially when you live in an atmosphere where joining becomes such a difficult thing for a lot of people to do, especially when they work for companies where you're kind of not encouraged to take that stand? Look at the NFL. Look at the NFL players. How many stood next to Colin Kaepernick but wouldn't kneel with Colin Kaepernick?
Right. No, and a little bit of that is when he took the knee, and I said it right away when he took the knee, his message is going to get hijacked.
Yeah.
Because now they're going to talk about the flag and not the message, right? And when we see violence right now, it takes away from what these people are really protesting. And then that's the sad part. It takes away from all the good police work that policemen do all over our country. To do the right thing, and it takes a couple guys to do the wrong thing, and all of a sudden they get pinned for the same deal. You know, and it's sad. It's just a sad state of affairs. It really is. This is 2020. This is 2020. I looked at this in 1968 at 14 years old, and I can't even imagine what my father went through. I can't imagine what he went through. He's going to service. Korean War, World War II. I mean, so I can't even imagine what he dealt with in the South. And now it's 2020, and I'm looking at this going, this doesn't make any sense to me. We're better than this. America's way better than this.
Do you have any doubt in your mind, Herm, about Colin Kaepernick's exile from this league? Do you think that this was there was a decision made at some point that this guy wasn't going to play, or do you think it's really about deteriorating skills, or do you think the truth lies somewhere in the middle?
Well, I think it's somewhere in the middle, and the fact of the matter is, are you willing to build your system around a guy that needs a system built around him? You know, and most quarterbacks do in our league. You guys know that. You know, they're system needy. Quarterbacks are system needy. 90% of the guys in the league, they need a system that fits what they do. You see that more in quarterbacks playing now, especially guys of color, to be quite honest. Systems are a little bit different. They allow them the ability to leave the pocket and run. They move the pocket. They do things so they can have success. So, you know, that was part of it. And I think the other part was we weren't ready for that. We weren't ready for him to take a knee as a league and say, what is this? You know, what is he doing? And quite frankly, when it happened, and I was working on television then, I said, I know what he's trying to do, but the message will get hijacked.
They did.
Because they make it about the flag.
Right.
Right? And I get that part. I mean, I get why people went there, but it wasn't about the flag. It had nothing to do with the flag. But because he did it in that setting, it just set off a different conversation.
So don't you feel like, though, Coach, no matter what the setting would have been, people would have found a reason to not accept it? I mean, I just get the sense that there are so many, you know, and I say this as a white guy, there are so many white people in this country who are so uncomfortable when they are forced to look at the fact that racism is a founding part of this nation, Coach. They can't even look at it. They get uncomfortable to hear the word slavery, to talk about the black experience, talk about Jim Crow. They get uncomfortable to even have the conversation.
And it's not their fault. It's a bad part of the history of America. But the problem is, in my opinion, the problem is, as you just mentioned, it's a difficult conversation, but that's the conversation you have with your kids when they're young. Because they can make a difference in the world. You know, they can make truly a difference because of what, it's just like football players. I got a multitude of different backgrounds in my room. Football players. And they're just football players, not because they're college athletes or student athletes, but they're going to be fathers, right? And they're all going to be pro football players, 2%. They don't go on with their life's work. But everything they learn about that, about coexisting with different types of people, with different types of beliefs, that's the conversations you got to have in your living room with your kids when they're growing up. So that's what they hear. You know, good soup like characters made at home. That's all made at home. So you can do something about it. If you talk about it, but if you don't talk about it, it kind of goes, like you say, you shove it in the corner, and it'll go away. It ain't going away.
I'm curious about this, Herm. So you're the head coach of Arizona State. You have a room full of kids. If you notice kids in there being racist, do you yell it out of them, punish it out of them, or is it already, that's too, he's 18 years old, you're not going to fix it?
Well, I think at this point, I think it kind of fixed itself. You can't survive in that environment. It won't allow you to survive. It just won't.
You didn't suffer any racism in the NFL when you were on a team?
Well, no. I'm coming up. I mean, you know, this is funny you say this because you're talking about 1977 when I came in as a rookie.
Right.
And there was I wouldn't say there was racism. There were certain positions you weren't going to be allowed to play. They asked you to go play another position. Mm-hmm. When I came in the league, there were 28 teams. There was only eight men of color that were coaches in the National Football League. Eight. 1977, not 1957, 1977, guys.
Not head coaches, coaches in general.
Period.
Yeah.
Period.
We're nowhere near eight head coaches now.
No.
No, not eight head coaches, coaches, period, at any position.
Right, I want to accentuate that, yeah.
Okay, and there were certain positions. You just, no one ever said it, but you just kind of knew. Don't try to play that one. They're going to change your position when you get in the league.
I mean, that's actually the most serious kind of racism, honestly, Coach. Because when you talk about you know, Michael's question and things players say, that's an issue of bigotry. But this is, you're talking about systemic racism of players just can't play certain positions.
Well, that's how it was. You guys know that.
Yeah,
sure.
Go back into the 70s. How many guys of color played quarterback or got an opportunity to do it? How many played offensive center? There's a bunch of positions, guys. Middle linebacker.
All the power positions.
All the positions of leadership, right?
Yep.
I mean, you know, now it obviously it's changed. 75% of all the players that play in the NFL are men of color. It's changed now. Now, the power positions having a whole lot. GMs.
Right.
You got two, you know, making decisions. That hasn't changed a whole lot.
No,
but as far as on the field, it has.
Herm, what about the responsibility of the athlete, especially the big-name athlete? So you've got the Michael Jordans of the world,
right,
who are like Republican buy sneakers too, or you got the introverted athlete. It's just not in him. Can we afford to have that anymore? I mean, if you're a big-name influential athlete, do you think it's their moral obligation now to take a stand, to take a side?
If they're compelled to do that. But see, the problem I have with that sometimes when you think about it, we want to make it like it's a black problem. This is an American problem.
Right.
It ain't just for all the black athletes to say, hey, man, you know, what are we doing? Now, come on. Stop all that, guys. We're better than this. It's an American problem. We can speak on it. And if you're a black athlete, I know what you're going to say. And they all feel the same way. I shouldn't say it. I'm pretty sure they are. We don't want violence. You know, protest is about this. Protest is not about what you're going to get from it. It's the next generation of kids that follow you. Will it be better? Because it's not going to get solved tomorrow. It's not going to get solved 5 years from now. Okay? And Martin Luther King was 1968, guys. I mean, it's 2 years. It never gets solved right away. There's no pill that everyone can take. Say, oh, it's going to change. No. You want it to change for your kid. I want it to change for the players that I'm coaching now, their kids. It has to change for them. It has to be better. America has to be better for them.
Before we let you go, do you believe that there's going to be college football this year with the COVID-19?
I'm hoping. We're going to work on the 15th of this month. We're going to give our best effort.
How tough is that going to be?
I'll put it this way. The game that we coach and play, it's not a social distancing sport. Mm-hmm. But we're going to try to make it work.
Yeah, if it is, you don't have good coverage.
And you're not going to win a lot of games.
Yes.
To be quite honest.
Herm, thanks for coming on and talking about a subject that we knew that you'd be so great talking about, and we wish you luck with the season hopefully starting soon.
My pleasure, my guys.
God bless you. That's Herman Edwards.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
For more than 80 years, Nissan has been there for you. And now is no different. We're offering flexible payment options for current NMAC customers. Our service departments are here to help. And for future owners, we're now offering more help. Deferred payments for 3 months on 11 models. Plus, we'll cover your payments for up to 2 additional months. Plus, get 0% APR financing for up to 60 months on 10 models. This is help when you need it. Visit NissanUSA.com today to learn more. Nissan, innovation that excites. Offers available to well-qualified buyers on purchase of an eligible 2020 Nissan from new dealer stock when financed through Nissan Motor Acceptance Corporation. Subject to NMAC credit approval and max term limit. Subject to residency restrictions. NMAC special APR cash amount is capped and varies by vehicle from $500 to $2,000, which customer can apply toward up to 2 monthly payments. Customer is responsible for all payments. Delayed payment must begin 90 days from date of contract. Accrual of interest commences from contract date and consumer responsible for accrued interest. Dealer participation may vary. Call 1-888-858-8319 for offer details, including list of eligible models and service availability. Offers end 6-1-20.